This is Talking Business.
I'm joined now by Dr. Don Hampson of Plato Investment Management. G'day, Don.
How are you, Alan?
Now, you've got a pretty swanky background. You've an academic, a PhD in finance, university medal from UQ, University of Queensland. And one of the things you do at Plato, which is, I think, an interesting strategy, is you buy stocks before they pay a dividend and then you sell them afterwards. Tell us how that works.
We run income funds for people who want a good income, and particularly for retirees, you don't actually need to own a stock for the whole year to get the dividend. You can buy it for a couple of months. We have a franking credit rule says you need to buy them for at least 45 days, and we generally buy them for a lot more than that. But our research has found that dividend-paying stocks tend, but don't always, but tend on average to outperform the market in the couple of months before they go ex-dividend. So it's an interesting strategy is to actually buy stocks because we expect them to outperform the market. And the byproduct of that, actually, you hold them through to the ex-date and you get the dividend and an important franking credit for Australian investors.
The theory would be, and I imagine you kind of learnt this at university, would be that the share price adjusts for the dividend. For the amount of the dividend, that you know, when the dividend is paid, that comes out of the stock. So how come that doesn't really work, or doesn't work? And
yeah, you're right, Alan. On the ex-dividend date, the share price does fall. Offsetting that, you get the dividend receivable, and you get the franking credit. And it's interesting that our research shows that on average on the ex-date, the stock price tends to fall by about the cash value of the dividend that you will receive. But if you're particularly a retiree or a low-tax investor, you get a franking credit as well. So you're actually ahead when you add them all together. Yes, you've lost a bit on the stock price, but you've got a dividend and you've got a franking credit. And it's interesting you talk about that academic. I mean, my first paper that ever got published was with a colleague. It shows my age here, but it was back in 1986 when dividend imputation first came into being. And it's interesting then we were saying how a lot of investors would love franking credits and migrate to stocks that pay these good dividends. And here I am 30 plus years later running a fund that does exactly that.
Is it something that individuals can do on their own, do you think, or is it really got to be done professionally?
I mean, you can certainly do this on your own. I mean, but there are a lot of tricks for beginners or tricks for young players, I suppose. And that is that sometimes the juiciest dividend paying stocks, which you might think, oh yes, we'll do well on this stock, tend to be the worst ones. And you know, in the last year or two, Telstra hasn't been a great performer. It's paid still pretty good fully franked dividends, but the share price just for its own reasons has fallen a lot. So before I did say stocks tend on average to outperform, but they don't all outperform. And if you just buy one or two, or even just buy the banks and they get hit by raw commission issues or bank levies and things, you can come unstuck. So we think it's best to be done in a very consistent fashion and across a broad portfolio of shares. Because we only expect these stocks to outperform by 1% or 2%. So if you have a bad result from a company or a bad piece of legislation which affects the banks or stocks like that, it can totally wipe out this sort of share price performance. So you need to do it in a broad portfolio. And we run about 100 stocks in our portfolio, so it is a very well-diversified portfolio.
So, as you say, Telstra's been a poor stock. So have the banks been. I mean, have you been doing the dividend strategy with the banks and Telstra?
We have. We've done a lot less on Telstra than we normally do. And indeed, we've been very cautious in terms of when we go in and when we go out. But you need to buy the stock before it goes X, but you don't necessarily need to take all the risk of the announcement risk, and you can buy that after the announcement and then hold it a bit later. What we do with the banks, and this is where I think we differ to a lot of people. A lot of people say, if you want a high income, you just got to buy a lot of banks and stuff your portfolio full of banks, buy two or three of those banks and get some good dividends. What we do is tend to trade them off. So the banks don't all go ex-dividend on the same day. So for instance, CommBank goes ex-dividend in August and in February. And so we can be overweight it at that period of time. And then once it goes ex-dividend, we can sell it down and then go overweight one or two of the other banks. So you don't need to be overweight banks. And that's one of the, I suppose, interesting features of our approach is that we don't take big sector biases, whereas many people who just say, I want a lot of dividend income from Australia will probably be overweight the banks and Telstra all the time. And clearly in 2017 and 18, that hasn't been a good decision because they've had atrocious performance versus the index.
One of the sectors that's become dividend payers in the last few years and traditionally not been is the mining companies. Do you think that's a permanent situation, that the miners have become more like income stocks, like banks, and that they'll stay that way?
I think they've certainly become more disciplined in terms of capital management and investment. They've had long periods of time of you know, reinvesting almost all their profits back into the business. But I think that the GFC and the fallout of that has made them much more disciplined, and they are focused more on returning capital to investors. Having said that, you know, it was only 2 years ago that they were cutting their dividends when iron ore prices and commodity prices in general, you know, had a cyclical low. So their ability to pay good dividends will ultimately always be a function of commodity prices. Right now, it's a pretty good period for a lot of the miners, particularly the Rios and BHP with their high-quality iron ore, which is selling at a good price. You know, they're returning good dividends to shareholders. We expect some capital management. They may actually do some buybacks as well, given they've been selling off some assets. So for the time being, yes, they're returning good capital, but it is a function of the resources cycle, and you know, hopefully we don't have as big a swing as we've had in the past.
Perhaps I could just get you to hop into a helicopter and head up to 10,000 feet. I mean, what do you think is going to happen to the investment management industry and the sort of the whole financial services business after the Royal Commission?
Well, we're already seeing a lot happening now. I mean, three of the big four banks are selling off a large amount of their sort of financial services business. And so I think you are going to see a reverse of the trend. In the last sort of 10 or 20 years, the banks AMP and IOOF have been busily buying up things and, you know, dominating the financial services area. But in the last couple of years, this groundswell and the Royal Commission, et cetera, has already caused the banks to reconsider their strategies. And so I think you're going to see a lot of the smaller groups, whether it be for small independent financial planning groups, small fund managers like ourselves, I think it'll be a more level playing field for those. And I think, you know, high quality boutique groups will do well, you know. So it's quite a changing landscape.
Yeah, it is. What about your own business? What do you think you're going to do with your own business?
Well, I mean, we see growth opportunities for our own business. Interestingly, our domestic income strategy is largely full. So, but what we do see is that Australians have had a love affair with the banks and Telstra, the stocks we're talking about, and they do pay great dividends. But clearly the problems with having that very much concentration have come home to roost in the last couple of years with the share price performance. And so for the last 3 or 4 years, we've been developing our offshore capabilities and continue to invest in them to look globally for income as well as just domestically, because despite the fact that there are, most people think there's not a lot of income coming from overseas stocks, when you actually look hard, there are quite a few good dividend payers out there. And so we've been able to build up quite a good diversified portfolio of global stocks that pay around 6% income per annum on a fund level. So
unfortunately, it's not frank, though, is it? You don't get the franking.
No, it's franking's the icing on the cake here in Australia, although there obviously are some question marks over that with some policies that are being discussed by the ALP at the moment. So, you know, it's not all about franking. Franking is icing on the cake, but, you know, I think I'd much rather have gone overseas and got 6% dividend than stayed at home in Telstra and lost nearly, you know, 40% of the share price to get a nice frank dividend, because that capital return is far outweighs any dividend I've received on Telstra in the last 18 months.
Well, that's a fair comment, that's for sure. Thanks very much, Don. It's been great talking to you.
Thanks, Alan.
Okay, I've been talking to Dr. Don Hampson, who's the CEO of Plato Investment Management.